Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
So we're starting off this
week. We review.
Oh, crying out loud.
Guys, I really wish that was something we left in 2020. It says, love this podcast, 5 stars. I love this podcast. It is great just telling people random facts and correcting them on random topics. It is great. I definitely recommend this. Lucy. Well, thank you very much, Lucy.
Thank you, Lucy.
Thank you, Lucy.
Shall we start the show?
No.
No. You can leave a podcast. You can leave a podcast. You can leave a review at Apple Podcasts.
I can leave a podcast. Thank goodness for that. Goodbye.
Drop your podcast in the comments below.
Luke will no longer be returning in SciGuys 2021.
No. We've evolved beyond the need.
I thought I was stuck here forever.
Luke, we put you on the other side of a screen for a reason, man. We were hoping you'd get the hint. Shall we start the show?
Let's start the show.
Hello and welcome to the SciGuys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Jamp and Luke Cutforth.
Hello.
Well, hello there.
This week, we're talking about still naps.
Still naps?
Still naps.
My first thought was comas.
It's a long nap.
That's a long nap.
That's medium nap because you've got sleeping,
yeah,
which is just nap. Okay, mm-hmm. You got coma, medium nap, mm-hmm. And then you've got being alivent, which is long nap,
which is the longest.
Yeah, the longest nap.
Yeah,
Luke, you got any idea what we're talking about this week?
Still naps.
Yeah.
Are we talking about sleep paralysis?
Ding ding ding. That is right. Well done.
Hell yeah!
Wow. I didn't think anyone's gonna get that. Yeah, we're talking about sleep paralysis this week. And you know what? Look, I'll preface it with this. We don't know much about sleep paralysis. So I'm giving you as much as we know, as far as I'm aware, but it is sort of in its infancy. Although it is something that I find is quite interesting. I've had sleep paralysis quite often. Have you guys ever?
Yeah. I had awful sleep paralysis as a kid. I used to have sleep paralysis combined with false awakenings where you like wake up and you're still inside a dream and then you wake up and you're paralyzed. It was like the double whammy of crap.
I've never I've never not been able to move. I've woken up scared.
I don't think you've had sleep paralysis then.
No, I've woken up like feeling scared for no reason, yeah. But I've always been able to move.
Yeah, so that's not sleep paralysis.
So it's a different thing.
It's a different thing, which you probably see a wimp. Doctor about
probably
it.
Just being a wimp.
Yeah. No, I mean, there's a reason. I'll get into it later. There might be a reason that you wake up a little bit scared. Mm. But yeah, no, look, I've actually had that as well. The sort of false awake. Like, I wake up and I'm like, aha, I'm awake. And then, oh no, I'm still in a dream. And then I'm like, aha, but dear. Now I'm awake and I can't move. Oh no. And then I wake up again, but I'm still in sleep paralysis and still in a dream. I've had it like 3 layers deep. It's like, Inception in my head. But before we get into it, the actual sort of meat of the episode, what is sleep paralysis? Anyone know what it is? A little explanation, maybe?
It is when you wake up and the mechanism that stops you from acting out your dreams is still in progress, or that's like the theory I've read. The mechanism that stops you acting out your dreams still exists, and so you've woken up, but part of you is still like keeping you still.
Yeah, so basically, it's essentially sleep paralysis. You wake up, but you can't move or speak, or you're paralyzed. And it usually happens when you're waking up or falling asleep. You kind of, your head, your brain sort of wakes up, but your body's like still asleep, essentially. And it can be really, really scary to go through because obviously being paralyzed suddenly with no warning is not fun. But also you can have hallucinations during. But it is, as far as we're aware, harmless. There is nothing wrong with it. Nothing that it doesn't hurt you.
Right.
But yeah, it's experiencing it is not fun. And most people will only get it once or twice in their life, but some people can get it very, very often and consistently. And so let's just go through sleep paralysis. So from, you know, when you're undergoing sleep paralysis during it, this is from the NHS. You might feel awake but can't move, speak, or open your eyes, or you might feel like someone's in your room, like something is pushing you down. You might feel scared, and this can all last for a few minutes. And the thing is that your breathing isn't changed. It's not like you can't breathe or your heart, you know, anything like that. And your eyes can still see. From what I've read, it seems that if you were able to, your eyes should still technically be able to see. You should still be able to perceive your immediate environment. But you're just unable to move. And often, like I said, accompanied with hallucinations and feelings of, oh, someone's in the room, someone's out to get me, things like this.
I had that as a kid.
Yeah.
Just the feeling of someone's in the room.
Yeah.
But I have been able to move. I just kind of like stopped myself from moving.
Yeah.
I've never like not been physically able to move.
That's probably because someone was in the room, wasn't it?
Yeah.
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 Yeah, as I said, these sort of sleep paralysis episodes, usually you can hallucinate, fully hallucinate, and sense something evil. And those are called intruder hallucinations. Feel pressure on your chest, which is incubus hallucinations. And you can have this feeling of movement, like an illusory like feeling of movement. So you hallucinate that you're like sort of there's moving, which is vestibular motor hallucinations. And I've had this before as well, where so it feels like I'm really fighting and I'm like, yeah, I can, I'm moving, I'm doing it. And I'm trying to shout and you're like,
it doesn't quite come out
all the time.
Oh, it's so.
Not now.
I've had that in dreams.
Yeah.
But never, no.
Yeah. But this is the thing. What happens with me in particular is now I've gotten to the point where I'm like, okay. Like most of the time I'm aware that it's sleep paralysis. And I know that like, sometimes I can either just be like, okay, I'm just gonna wait for this to end, or I can like force myself out of it, and it feels like there's static in my head and like a lot of pain to like force, but like I'm like and then I'm awake and I'm like, ah, cool, got all my movement again. Now to not go back to sleep, because if I force myself out of sleep paralysis and go back to sleep
directly, again.
If I force myself out of it and go back to sleep directly afterwards, it will just happen again. There have been periods where I've like woken up from it and then I've gone back to sleep and it's happened again, then I've woken up and like quite a few times. Obviously my experiences aren't universal, but yeah, it's not fun, but I feel like when it happens to you for years on end, at some point you're just like,
okay,
sometimes you can be like, oh Christ, this
again.
Yeah. So it happens all over the world. Apparently there are different names for sleep paralysis in over 100 different cultures. And in a lot of places, apparently, it can be interwoven with folklore or whatnot, which is I think quite interesting. You know, obviously, I always think this is interesting how sort of different cultures across the world like explain sort of different phenomena, like you know, that happens to people. So in this instance with sleep paralysis, you know, different cultures coming up with different reasons for why it might exist. It's just I think it's interesting, but yeah, apparently sleep paralysis has been suggested as an explanation for things like witchcraft, demonic assault, and space alien abduction, which makes sense. If you hallucinate that there are aliens, you know, touching you, you're like, oh no,
yeah,
I've woken up on an alien spaceship and I can't move.
Real.
And the aliens here, and then they've just put me back down in my bed. So people will assume they've been abducted by aliens. And this was really interesting to me. Usually people are scared and upset about sleep paralysis, which makes sense because it's not fun. But apparently some people have reported feelings of bliss, a blissful sleep paralysis.
Ooh.
Where they wake up, they can't move, and they think, wow.
I'm in heaven.
I feel so good. Yes.
I don't have to do anything.
Exactly. I can't do anything if I want, and I don't have to. You good, Luke?
Yeah, I'm just fascinated by this because I had this fairly recently when you said like the intruder hallucination. I had this like week or so of incredibly vivid dreams of like where one night I was sleeping and this sort of shadowy kind of weird figure was standing in the doorway and then like slunk over and started attacking Rebecca, my fiance. And then I wake up and I'm just like trying to scream. And then eventually, because I've been trying to scream so much, I then do scream and mm-hmm. I go, ah! And Rebecca's like, whoa. And it was, I'd never knew this was like a thing. And so whilst you were, as soon as you said that, I just Googled intruder hallucination and it's the bedroom intruder. And it's this shadowy figure that comes and like, whoa. But I didn't have them like come and press on my chest. I had them go and attack my fiance instead.
I love that Luke is such a loving, caring person that sort of hallucinations that usually only affect the self affect people that he loves.
It's almost like you're more scared of something hurting Rebecca than hurting you.
Yeah, that's lovely.
That's cute.
Yeah, no, I mean,
oh, lovely.
I'll try and be more quiet next time I come into your room. But it's interesting, isn't it? The different sort of experience. Like, I've definitely woken up screaming so many times. In fact, like, I'll do it and then be like, ah, I'm like, oh, whoops,
sorry,
oh, no one's sorry. It's kind of ridiculous. I've actually woken up laughing once.
On the topic of this, I am a chronic sleep laugher. And Phoenix will attest to this. I just giggle in my sleep for no reason. I don't even remember it. I don't even remember them. That's the thing.
Really?
If I'm having funny dreams, I don't remember them.
See, I remember my dreams. Like a lot of them. I remember so many of my dreams. In fact, I won't read this out to you, but I woke up at like 5 a.m. and I had to write down. And you know what? I will read out some of this, right? Because it's ridiculous. I woke up at 5 a.m. and I had to write down this dream because I was convinced that it was a plot to a fantastic novel or film that I simply had to record. So, and I will read it out verbatim and I'll go through it quite quickly. So it says, world constantly reset, controlled by Handler. Handler has higher-ups. Unknown powers. Company runs this to make the world right and good, but in their vision, light bearers in brackets three together must reset the world to be free. And then it goes on into, it's almost gibberish.
Like
the light bearers are aided by people high up in the company that are defecting from the company. I genuinely thought this dream was like a revelatory. Like, I was like, this is a brilliant idea. And then I read it again the other day, and I'm like, this doesn't make any sense.
That sounds like Groundhog Day. If you take Groundhog Day, mix it with a bit of a capitalism commentary.
Yeah, it's kind of like, yeah.
Yeah.
And then also a little bit of the Hunger Games in there as well.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
And specifically Eagle Eye, a film with Shia LaBeouf from 2007. I love that film. Yeah, no, dreams are weird. It's weird what goes on in your head. Like, it's weird that every single day, every single person on this planet just conks out for 30% of their life and has vivid hallucinations.
I wouldn't be able to tell you who it is, but I heard the talk about like how every night everyone around the world just basically lapses into what would, if it was happening in waking consciousness, be described as a psychotic state where you see things that aren't there, hear things that aren't there, experience things that aren't happening. And that's called dreaming, and it's just totally normal. But your brain is just hallucinating for like a significant portion of the night. And sometimes those are nice hallucinations, sometimes they're horrible hallucinations, and sometimes they're really mundane hallucinations. The night I woke up screaming, I was like, so Rebecca, what did you dream of? And she was like, I dreamt I was buying a new pair of trousers.
I don't think I've had a mundane dream in years. All of my dreams are either horrifying or just like I wake
high
like,
you concept.
Know, yeah, I wake up and I'm like, oh man, that could be a movie.
So until, yeah, something exciting is going to be going on, right?
Yeah, yeah, it's always something. It's always something. Yeah, I mean, lucid dreaming as well. We'll have to do an entire episode on lucid dreaming because it's such a thing. But no, I just think that sleep paralysis, it's interesting because It is an issue because of, well, it feels like an issue because obviously this sort of it's basically almost bringing dreaming into a little bit more of reality, which is why it's so terrifying because you know you're awake and your brain's like, I'm awake. And when I'm awake, things are real. But also you're dreaming and it's just very confusing to go through. But yeah, so let's talk about the prevalence. So we general estimates will put sleep paralysis as affecting roughly about 8%, 7.6 to 8% of the population. Although each individual study, each individual study, but different studies have estimated from anywhere from 2% to 60%. Bear in mind that this could be an instance of it just happening once. I think the 8% is it happens like sort of consistently with that 8%. And there isn't a sort of standard measure for sleep paralysis, which is probably one of the issues that of like why we don't know exactly how many people sort of I wouldn't say suffer from it, but how many people are affected by it. How you ask the question is really kind of important in determining whether someone has sleep paralysis or not, because if you say it in one way, they might not. Do you know what I mean? Like in that you said that, oh yeah, I feel like someone's in the room, but
I've had
don't
bits of it, but I've not had the main bit, which is not being able to move.
Exactly. So depending on how well it's explained or how the question is asked, people may or may not say that they've had it. And the thing is with sleep paralysis, if you go across multiple studies, it doesn't sort of increase in incidence with sort of age necessarily. And it slightly affects women more than men, slightly. But then I've found other studies that say that might not be the case. Mm. But it can start at any age. But usually it starts to show up in childhood, adolescence, or young adulthood. So anywhere from sort of being a little child to sort of your early 20s, it might start. Once it starts, it usually continues. And if it starts as you're a teenager, sort of adolescence, it can start to happen more frequently as you get older.
Yeah.
And interestingly, if you've got a sort of psychiatric illness, the incidence is much higher. So. Among the mentally ill, sleep paralysis is more common.
Right.
And also in non-white populations, sleep paralysis it's also been found to be slightly higher. We don't understand sort of the causation for that. We've just noticed a correlation. It's really interesting this is something that seems to happen to a good 8%, almost 1/10 of the world, and even estimated up to 60%, and we just don't know. We don't really know much about what's going on with it. We don't know what causes it. We don't know why it affects some people more than others.
Right.
We're very much in the infancy of understanding this. I thought that was interesting. You've got a mental illness, you've got a slightly higher incidence of that, which is I don't know.
Yeah.
Interesting. Makes sense. Yeah. I don't know why. It makes sense, but I don't have an explanation for it. Like I said, there's no sort of direct causal risk factor between there's no sort of like direct causation between any sort of risk factor and sleep paralysis. So in the studies that have been done, they can't say if you are mentally ill, you have a higher risk because of X.
Mm-hmm.
All they've really noticed is, if people that have got mental illnesses have a slightly higher rate of or a higher risk factor of sleep paralysis. Specifically, there's sort of anxiety disorders, poor sleep quality, drinking alcohol, trauma, and a family history of sleep paralysis are all risk factors that have been associated with sleep paralysis. But actually, there is some suggestion that there could be a genetic predisposition towards it, because there have been lots of studies that have found some kind of familial sort of association between between it, in that you're potentially more likely to have it if a member of your family has it. So we think there might be a genetic component for that. Yeah. Does anyone in your family ever had sleep paralysis? It's not something that I really think people... I feel like no one's really talking about it until recently. The past few years.
Yeah, I don't know anyone in my family, no.
No.
Just friends.
Yeah, right?
Although, to be fair, I've never talked about it with my family, so.
Exactly, which is odd, because, like, if you're waking up unable to, like, it's just one of those things where I never mentioned it, because I was like, I guess this is just a thing.
Used to it.
Just a nightmare. it's not something that is really, I think, brought up very often, you know? It's one of those things where I feel like, you think that you're just having a normal nightmare until you find out that, no, actually, waking up paralyzed isn't a normal thing that just happens to sort of everyone.
I just find it funny that I started this episode being like, hell yeah, I have this all the time. Had this in childhood, have this now, had it recently. And then you're like, so amongst the mentally ill, it's very high. And I'm like, oh dear. Oh no.
So there is one thing that is somewhat linked to sleep paralysis, or that has some kind of relationship to sleep paralysis.
I want
to
talk about it. Falling asleep?
You know what? Like, yes, but I don't like that you said it. No, it's
guys, I've the solution. Cured it. You have sleep paralysis? Have you tried not going to sleep?
I'm sure that will work very well.
There is a 100% correlation between sleep paralysis and having gone to sleep in the last 5 hours.
That is very true.
I would simply not sleep.
Yes, I would actually.
Well, I imagine that, is there sleep paralysis and insomnia correlations? People not wanting to go to sleep because they're going to have sleep paralysis?
Yeah, no, it can actually cause anxiety disorders because people are so anxious about sleeping. So, okay, here we go. I'll tell you a little bit about narcolepsy. That's actually what I was going to talk about. There's some kind of, there is something to be said about narcolepsy and sleep paralysis. So what is narcolepsy? It's a brain a neurological condition that really just kind of makes you fall asleep.
Spontaneously.
At times when it's not appropriate to fall asleep. So your brain can't regulate sleeping and waking the way it should. So you can be really tired during the day, which obviously is not ideal because if you're tired, you feel sort of drowsy and it's difficult to concentrate. There's something called sleep attacks, which you just fall asleep suddenly without warning. Cataplexy, which is just you lose control of your muscles, which makes them sort of weaker during sort of laughter or anger. Like in a sudden response to emotion,
right,
or a response to sudden emotion, your sort of muscle tone can just kind of go. So you could sort of, the muscles could collapse or just, you know, become much weaker.
I see.
Yeah.
That's like the opposite of those fainting goats.
Sorry?
It's like the opposite of those fainting goats. When they get startled, they just like go rigid.
Is that how they faint?
I think they don't actually faint. They basically go into like rigor mortis almost. Yeah, they just like completely rigid up and then fall over. Because they can actually they can stay stood up. Sometimes if they're like at the right angle when they do it, they just stay stood up like a statue.
Oh, interesting. I suppose it must be the opposite of that. And also sleep paralysis is something that can happen with narcolepsy. So that's the thing. Like, obviously, if you have sleep paralysis, I'm not saying you've got narcolepsy, but if you have narcolepsy, you could get sleep paralysis. That is one thing that we have noticed, that people with narcolepsy tend to have sleep paralysis. And that's even on the NHS website. If you look up narcolepsy on the NHS website, it's one of those symptoms that they list there. Love the NHS website.
That sounds like logical, because if your brain is sort of like struggling to regulate when parts turn on and off, waking up is like you're booting up, and you want all your different sections to boot up, and like if you're still, the hallucinations sound like they come from the same part of you that's sort of dreaming, like part of your brain is still dreaming, so that's meant to have shut down. And then narcolepsy is your whole brain suddenly shutting down, or portions of your brain shutting down. And sleep paralysis is the part of you that's meant to inhibit your movements not shutting down. Interesting.
Yeah. Well, just to be clear, so for any of the actuallys listening, that they're always listening.
Well, there's always a couple. It's always a couple. There.
Sleep does not mean your brain is shutting down, obviously. But that's
sorry.
Just,
yes.
No.
Isn't that being dead?
Yeah. Look, you're perfectly fine to say that. I'm not saying this for you.
I would like to issue a formal apology.
To the actuallys? Because I don't think they deserve it.
They've probably already typed their comments. It's fine.
It's already sent. They've already complained.
They've already hit enter.
So we'll get into how sleep works in just a sec. But with narcolepsy, obviously, it doesn't cause any sort of long-term physical health problems, but it can impact, in that it doesn't directly do that, but obviously it can impact your daily life and the lack of sleep, and it's difficult to cope with in that sense. So, it's not something that you're not necessarily going to sort of die or become very ill from narcolepsy by itself. It's just one of those things where the sort of knock-on effects will affect you. But sleep paralysis could be sort of a symptom of narcolepsy. That's not to say that if you get sleep paralysis every now and then, you should be worried about having narcolepsy. You'd notice the other things first, probably. But why don't we talk a little bit about how sleep works? Do you know how sleep works? Maybe? Any idea?
Well, there's the different stages of sleep, isn't there? There's REM sleep. Mm-hmm. And then you got, is it stage 1, 2, 3, and 4?
Stage 1, 2, 3, and REM. Yeah.
1, 2, 3, and REM. That's it.
So why don't we, let's go from the start. Not the very start, but obviously starting to sleep. So you've got the hypothalamus. It's this little bit that's right inside your brain. And it basically controls sleep and wake. So essentially, I think it kind of controls your almost circadian rhythm. Mm. Because it's almost directly attached to the sort of parts of your eyes. So it can sense how much light there is. So it can have this sort of light dark cycle that affects your circadian rhythm. So your mm-hmm. sort of sleep wake cycle. Obviously your sleep wake cycle is dependent on light dark cycle. Even blind people can still have some sort of light perception.
Oh, yeah.
Which means that they can still have some form of a sleep wake cycle based on that light dark cycle. Then you've got the thalamus, which is kind of like a relay, and it takes stuff from the senses, then it puts it into the cerebral cortex. And during most parts of sleep, your thalamus just doesn't do very much. It's sleeping, and it kind of tunes out everything else that's going on. But then during REM sleep, rapid eye movement sleep, the thalamus is active and it starts sending the sort of cerebral cortex images, sounds, and all the other things that fill our dreams. Mm. So the thalamus just shoots all that information into your brain, being like, you are dreaming now, you are dreaming. But when it doesn't want you to dream, it's like, shh, okay, sleep time. Then you've got the brainstem, which is like so the medulla. That does something very interesting. So during REM sleep, as Luke said, it basically paralyzes the muscles. So during REM sleep, that's when you're most likely to be dreaming. It's not the only time that you dream. You can dream in all stages of sleep, but it's the time you're most likely to be dreaming. And your body does not want you doing anything. Because if you're dreaming and you're dreaming that you're running away from, say, a bear, your body's going to be like, okay, got to run away from this bear.
Without be running in bed.
Yeah, without respect for the fact that you're asleep. So, if you've got a dream where you need to punch yourself in the face, you're going to be waking up with a punched face.
A bloody nose, yeah.
Yeah, so your brain is like, okay, body, I know you don't know the difference between dreams and reality, so I'm just going to paralyze you for a hot minute while I play out this.
You have fun in there. Yeah. I'll chill out the body.
Yeah.
So you don't hurt yourself.
Exactly. So your brainstem just paralyzes your muscles, basically so you don't move around when you're sleeping. And then you've got the pineal gland, which is it's basically it makes melatonin, which is a hormone, which helps you sort of go to sleep. And in fact, you can actually take melatonin as a sort of supplement. Mm. Yeah, to help you if you're not very good at sleeping, because if you've got let's say you've lost your sight, you can't perceive enough light to moderate that sleep-wake cycle, you can take melatonin at the right time and your body's like, oh, it's melatonin time. Yeah, let's get
sleepy.
Yeah. And for anyone listening, melatonin is a hormone, not to be confused with melanin, which is a pigment. Melatonin sends you to sleep. Melanin makes you black.
Yeah. That is
Can you take that as a supplement?
It's called
not yet.
No, it's called blackface, Luke, and I wouldn't recommend it.
Oh God, you just made me problematic. I'm sorry. Yeah. Oh no.
So yeah, that's what that does. Oh, and then there's also the amygdala, and your amygdala, we've spoken about it before. It processes emotions and it gets like it goes into hyperdrive during REM sleep. It really gets itself going. Mm. Again, REM sleep, as I said, rapid eye movement sleep, named for the rapid movement of your eyes. They go,
no,
I don't know if you can see it. Maybe you can see on my eyelids. They move. You can usually see it. The little eyes moving. Anyway, as I said, let's get into the stages of sleep. You've got rapid eye movement sleep and non-rapid eye movement sleep. From now on, I'm just going to be saying REM. You've got REM sleep and non-REM sleep. Those are like broadly the two stages, but non-REM sleep, you can split down into stage 1, 2, 3. Luke, please open your eyes again.
And you're back in the room.
I just caught it.
I was in REM sleep.
I caught it out my peripheral. I was like, this guy. So you go through, bear in mind that throughout the night, you go through all of the stages multiple times. It's not just, REM sleep and then wake up. It's stage 1, 2, 3, REM, and then you cycle back through a few times. And then you get longer. REM sleep basically gets longer the more cycles you've gone through as you get closer to waking up. So you fall into a sort of a longer and deeper sleep. That's one of the reasons it's easier to wake someone up. It's really easier to wake someone up like when they've just fallen asleep rather than waking someone up that's been asleep for a little while.
Yeah.
You know? So stage one, again, stage one is non-REM sleep. That is where you are switching from being awake to being not awake. So it doesn't last very long. It's only a few minutes, and it's quite light sleep, so it's easy to wake people up. Heartbeat, breathing, and eye movements, they're all slow. Your muscles start to chill out, and sometimes they'll do a little twitch here and there. And your brain waves change from sort of awake brainwave patterns to sleepy time brainwave patterns. You got stage two, which is, again, non-REM sleep. Lighter sleep. That's like kind of medium sleep before you hit the deeper sleep. And your heartbeat and breathing are still slow. Your muscles are even more relaxed. So like it's super chilled out. Your body temperature drops and your eye movements stop. Your eyes aren't moving anymore. They're just chilling out. Your brainwave activity slows, but sometimes there's like little bursts of like, boo, 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 a little bit of activity. And you spend, as you sort of do more sleep cycles throughout the night, you spend more of those cycles in stage two sleep rather than in other sleep stages.
Right.
And then stage three, non-REM sleep. That is deep, deep sleep. That is deep, deep sleep. And that without that, you don't really feel quite as refreshed. So if you're like, you know, going to sleep and waking up and being like, I feel like I've not slept. It's because you're probably not hitting that sleep that you need to hit. So it is longer during the first half of the night, and your heartbeat and breathing slow to like the lowest point in this stage, and your muscles are relaxed, and it's much harder to wake people up when they're in this stage of sleep, and obviously your brainwaves slow down as well. I know you've got the interesting one, the one that everyone wants to talk about, which is REM sleep. So that first happens roughly about an hour and a half into falling asleep. Your eyes start moving rapidly, and it's rapid eye movement sleep, REM. And your brain waves are closer. Your brain activity basically looks much more like it is when you're awake. You start to breathe more quickly. Your heart rate goes up. Your blood pressure goes up. And all of, basically, with REM sleep, think about it this way. All these other sort of sleeps, you're getting more into sort of deeper sleep. And REM sleep is your brain is acting almost as though it's awake. Your heart and your blood pressure are acting almost as though they're awake.
Yeah.
Breathing almost as though you're awake. But because this is the part where most of your dreaming happens, all of this happens, but your body is paralyzed. So it's during REM sleep that your body is paralyzed. Your arm and leg muscles are just not doing it. So if you think about it, it makes sense that sleep paralysis can happen because this is similar in a lot of ways to being awake, other than the fact that you aren't, and also your body is paralyzed. apparently you spend less of your sleep time in REM sleep as you age. So that's just something there. But that, again, as I said, that's the point where you're most likely to dream. So what actually causes sleep paralysis? We've already gone into this a little bit. It's when you can't move at all, when you wake up. Essentially, like we said, your body is still like sleepy time, but your brain is like, I'm awake now, let's get moving. We don't actually know why sleep paralysis happens. Like we know how, we don't know why. We know how in that we know that you're paralyzed and not asleep,
right?
We don't know like We don't know what causes that. Again, we've linked it to some things like insomnia, which Luke mentioned earlier. Like sort of different sleep patterns. So if you like work late at night, or if you're traveling a lot, you disrupting your sleep can cause it can cause sort of sleep paralysis. Narcolepsy, as we said, PTSD, anxiety, panic disorders, or a sort of potential genetic predisposition with a family history of sleep paralysis. But yeah, I mean, plenty more to get through, but it's, I don't know, I think sleep paralysis is one of those things where it's like, I really feel like we should know what's causing it at this point, you know?
It seems like it should be straightforward.
Right? Just do a study.
Because like, we've figured out the rest of sleep.
Yeah, well, it's just this, we haven't.
Well,
well, we haven't. We have
most
haven't.
Of it.
Right. I think that, yeah. Well,
no.
No.
We don't even know why we sleep.
That's the thing. I was going to say, science, we're very bad at answering why questions.
Right.
Why questions, well, not bad. But why questions are harder. How questions, you can usually, like, yeah. Think if you think about it this way, with a how question, usually you can just watch. Whereas a why question, you need to infer and then prove that.
True.
You know, so we can tell like how we sleep because we're just looking at it. We're like, ah, this is what's happening. We can just write that down and describe it. But why we sleep? We've got to be like, well, what benefit does it have? Does that make sense? This and that. So yeah, like what actually causes sleep paralysis? We're not entirely sure. We can say what is happening in that, as I said, your body is paralyzed, but your brain is awake, essentially. But what causes your brain to be awake and your body to continue to be paralyzed? We're not entirely sure. We just don't know yet. But yeah, I mean, as I've said, usually it can often start to happen sort of, when you're waking up, but it can also happen when you're going to sleep as well. I don't think it's too dissimilar to the sort of, when you sort of kick yourself awake, things like that. It happens usually at the same sort of, it feels like it happens at the same sort of, stages of sleep when you're falling asleep.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously this can also happen when you're, waking up. But yeah, there are
You kick yourself awake?
You can kick yourself awake, yeah. You know when you feel like you're falling and you suddenly kick and jolt awake?
Oh, I thought you meant like one of your legs kicks another leg and then
kicks
you're like,
you.
Oh, no, sorry. I mean like, sorry, I'm, you know.
Ow, stop kicking me.
I realize that I'm using terminology from Inception. You know, the kick?
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's falling backwards in a chair. But yeah, yeah, sure.
No, sorry, it's the feeling of falling.
Yeah.
The feeling of, yeah, you get that. You could jolt yourself awake.
I was like, who the hell is just giving a little swing of themselves in their sleep and then being like, whoa, who was that? Who was that? How you said, come here, I'll take you.
I mean, dogs do that, don't they?
They fart themselves awake. I've never seen one kick themselves awake. Well,
they run in their sleep, things like that.
They run in their sleep, yeah. But I don't think they kick themselves like a football.
Oh, my cat runs in his sleep.
Really?
Sometimes. Yeah. If there is. Or like drinks water.
Your that cat drinks like, water in his sleep.
But not so actually cool. Drinks water, just like just,
yeah.
Just like the tongue motion.
Also, I mean, it's interesting that cats are dreaming about just drinking and walking.
It's the most exciting part of their day.
Their entire waking day nothing. Is a dream.
Yeah.
So like, I'd love to be in a cat's dream because it would be so incredibly mundane because just their like, lives are already perfect.
Reality 2.0. It's just the same thing.
To be fair. True. So there are some difficulties that come with researching sleep paralysis, obviously, because like I already said, describing it is something we need to be specific about. We don't actually have one sort of standardized description of it that we can use, or sort of one standardized sort of description to use, or in sort of questionnaires or when asking people about it. So it's not as sort of good as it could be in that sense. So it can be a little bit difficult, but also because basically the terminology around it is a little bit messy. And obviously, as I said as well, narcolepsy, sleep paralysis can be a symptom of narcolepsy. So there is difficulty studying sleep paralysis because you may be studying narcolepsy at the same time. So isolated sleep paralysis is a phrase that has kind of come up to be used when you're talking about sleep paralysis without a narcolepsy diagnosis. So if someone's got sleep paralysis but no narcolepsy, then isolated sleep paralysis is something that we've started to use more to describe that. But there's also fearful isolated sleep paralysis to say, basically to say, oh, this person does not have narcolepsy, and also sleep paralysis really scares them. And then also, if it happens a lot, there's also the term recurrent fearful isolated sleep paralysis for when someone is continually having sleep paralysis that is very scary and distresses them, but they don't have narcolepsy. So we're coming up with these different sort of terms and phrases to describe sleep paralysis. But as I said, it's interesting because this is something that I thought would have more studies behind it, but it's really in its infancy to the point where we don't even have sort of, I find maybe one study, there were a few studies talking about sort of more neurobiological mechanisms for them. So I sort of talking about how dopamine could affect sleep paralysis, but I didn't find many that said, ah, yes, we know what it is. It's more a case of, yeah, well, this is probably it. This could be it, you know?
Yeah.
What's really interesting is the consistency, or at least some consistency across the hallucinations that we have. Because like you say, like there's always this, the story I've always heard from sleep paralysis, although this is not something I've experienced directly, is that you wake up feeling like somebody's sitting or pressing on your chest.
Yeah.
And you actually hallucinate a humanoid figure over you holding your chest down.
Yeah.
And like the frequency with which that specific experience occurs and is described is fascinating. Whether that's just some kind of psychological predisposition we have to describe feelings, like if you're feeling a resistant, like if you're trying to move and you can't move, then your brain infers that there must be something stopping you moving. Yeah. And then we are predisposed to human faces or predisposed to humanoid figures or, yeah, it's interesting.
So the thing is that apparently one of the reasons that you can really feel scared when you wake up is because your brain enters this sort of state of being hyper-vigilant. And we get this, and it sounds to Jamp when you say that you wake up scared, that you're also waking up in that hyper-vigilant state without being paralyzed.
Now,
if you wake up in that hypervigilant state, you're going to be like on edge about everything. So yeah, you would maybe you'd be worried that you'd be worried about there being someone in the room or someone being there. And as for hallucinating a person, I mean, it only makes sense that people would hallucinate people, really, in that it's what we spend most of our time around. And you know, if you were to wake up and you weren't able to move, and you know that when you went to sleep, you were able to move, and you personally did not do anything to inhibit your own movement, then one can only assume that someone else has had a hand in that. So yeah, it makes sense that we generally, ascribe a human entity to a feeling of a dark presence or a feeling of a pressing down, because often as well, people will say, oh yeah, my sleep paralysis demon, like the thing that sits on the end of my bed or the thing that's in the corner of my room, because you feel like there's something there. And that something there is usually some kind of person, whether it's a sort of scary, evil force of a person. It's usually a person, even ghosts. You know, we talk about ghosts and we're like, oh yes, it's the ghost of a Victorian child. It's never the ghost of a frog that was stepped on, you know, because we almost...
They don't get to be ghosts.
No, it's not the ghost of a fly that acts. You know what I mean?
No, like,
we always have things be human. Usually, you know, even now, angels are depicted as human, despite the fact that in the Bible they were way cooler.
I was gonna say they had like 1,000 heads, didn't they?
Yeah, stuff like that, like a whole bunch of wings, like 20 eyes. Oh,
yeah,
more than
that.
Oh, it's great. Yeah, no, I think it's interesting. I think that it seems to make sense that if you wake up in this sort of state where you're hyper vigilant towards everything, that the hallucinations would be similar and shared, because we have a lot of shared things across humanity. You know, it's interesting. I mean, in the same way that you can find a lot of across world religions, you can find a lot of common things that crop up. Because while we're all very varied and very different, there are some things that we all are drawn to. I don't know. It's cool, though.
Yeah.
The sort of hallucination aspect of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's kind of like the difficulties in researching it. The last bit I've got is just the treatment. So There is no treatment directly for sleep paralysis, unfortunately. There's no way to end an episode if it's happening. Although, in all fairness, how would you? You know, you got. I've got my sleep paralysis EpiPen. If only I could reach it. And
if you manage to stick it in yourself, you've already fixed it.
Yeah, exactly. So unless you've got your sleep paralysis helper on hand at all times to stab you when you're asleep.
But no. How will you tell them if you can't scream?
Whenever you sleep, they just
your eyes are open. Your eyes open because that's everything below the brainstem that doesn't move, isn't it?
Well, no, your eyes. Like, I mean, for me, for example, my eyes don't necessarily open. My eyes. No, I don't think that's. I don't think that's because then you'd be able to speak, wouldn't you?
Mm.
Yes, but then is that just? So where's the line? How do you know that you're awake when you're like having sleep paralysis and you've woken up, but your eyes aren't open? Because when, yeah, because I have,
hold on, wait,
like, when I have false awakenings, I sometimes hallucinate the room that I then do wake up in.
Yeah, I do that all the time. Yeah.
Oh, it's so weird. So weird.
It's like you can tell that your sort of consciousness when you're asleep is different from your consciousness when you're awake, you know?
Mm. Unless you lucid dream.
Oh, yeah, but then even then, that's kind of different, isn't it?
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, I just feel like you can tell sort of you know what sleep paralysis is still sort of being asleep. It's just you're more kind of conscious of.
Mm-hmm. I've never had a sleep paralysis experience in which I didn't open my eyes.
Really?
Unless what I was actually having was a false awakening in which I thought I'd opened my eyes.
Yeah.
But actually, my eyes were still closed.
See, that's what.
But I was hallucinating the room that I was in. Oh man, no, it's so confusing.
I basically hallucinate the room that I'm in a lot. Like, and it's a lot of the time, it's not. And also, I sleep under the duvet as well, so I can't see anything. You know, so it's I don't know. And also, it's usually dark. So yeah. So yeah, I mean, we can't directly treat sleep paralysis yet, especially during an active episode. But what we can do, we've tried to attack the sort of psychological issues, the mental health issues that sort of trigger those episodes. Mm. Even though we don't know exactly the causation between them. And actually, in some cases, one can develop anxiety about sleeping and can develop insomnia through fear of, you know, going to a sleep paralysis episode. So, again, like I said, nothing available to stop an episode when it's in progress, but we have been trying to give people sort of therapy to reduce their chances of getting into an episode in the first place.
Mm.
And that's focused attention meditation. And also on top of that, muscle relaxation therapy.
Right.
So both of those we've done studies and we think that, yeah, they could have some benefit, you know. They could actually be clinically useful to treat sleep paralysis. But yeah, also, because we've noticed that sleep paralysis also happens in high instance with other issues with sleep, just sleeping better, improving your sleep hygiene it can really help with sleep paralysis. So having a fixed sleeping schedule, so waking up and sleeping at the same time every day, having, like, you know, a good mattress and pillow, and also sort of limited light and noise in your bedroom, not watching TV in your bedroom or going on your phone in your bed, drinking less alcohol or caffeine, all of these sort of things, you know, like limiting electronic use before bed, like for up to like half an hour or an hour. All of that stuff has been shown to maybe like help with sleep paralysis purely by helping you sleep better. So it seems that sleep paralysis seems to come from sort of, it is disrupted sleep, but it can be exacerbated by other forms of disrupted sleep. So yeah, that's kind of sleep paralysis. We don't really know very much about it, but it is something that definitely happens to about sort of 8% of the population. Yeah, what do you guys think? Anything you want to add to sleep paralysis?
8% is less than I thought.
Really?
It still sounds like a lot.
Yeah, actually, I don't know. But
the amount of people I hear talk about it, I'm like, it's got to be like half the population maybe.
Yeah,
but there's loads of people. Like, think about what percentage of people you know, Jamp, who have experienced depression.
True.
We operate in the creative industries. Like, we have a very warped
very true
demographic of the world. There's lots of people who we just don't come across, like types of people which don't come across in our walks of life.
Mm.
And that, yeah, everyone, like most of the people I know have had depression, but only like, what, a third of the people in the world ever have it?
Yeah, which is ridiculous. I feel like I should know more of the ones that don't have it, you know?
Right. Now, they stay away from us, man.
I know, but I mean, I know why, but like, I don't want them to. Be my friend, please. But no, that is the end of the show for this week. We hope you enjoyed it. Should we mention Spotify and all the other stuff?
We probably should.
Yeah.
You should go follow us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or whatever your favorite podcast app is.
Yeah, and if you're on Apple, why don't you leave us a little review, a little 5-star review? We love that. Mm. It really helps with the podcast. It bumps us up in the charts. And listening to us on Spotify is great because we hit, like last year, we hit 88, I think 84. We hit somewhere in the 80s of the top UK comedy podcasts. And it'd be great to do that this year again. So definitely go ahead to, you know, one of your favorite podcast listening stations and listen to us there. You can also support us on Patreon, patreon.com/SciGuys, because we release so much cool stuff. We've got bonus episodes every month. We've got a really cool one coming out this month about some pseudoscience that I find quite interesting. We've also got bonus clips. So like if something is, you know, a little too spicy for an episode, you'll see it on our Patreon. We've also got votes for episode topics, submitting episode topics. We've got a Discord where you can chat with us and we'll, you know, hang out. You can chat with everyone that likes Sci Guys. It's a lot of cool stuff. So head over to patreon.com/SciGuys and sign up there. But with that, thank you for watching. You can find the full references for this episode in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Sunday, and why not leave a nice wee review? You can support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys, or you can find and contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok too. Yeah. Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com. I am not Corey everywhere.
I'm Jamkin everywhere.
I'm Luke Cupboard everywhere.
Sleep tight.
Don't let the backpacks bite.
Well, you can't do anything about it because you can't move. Good night. Oh.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Lowe's knows when you're looking for reliability, the right brand makes all the difference. And now, Lowe's is the exclusive home improvement retailer for the Whirlpool water treatment line, including their Wi-Fi softener, under-sink filtration system, and more. With Whirlpool's proven performance and our everyday low prices, better tasting, better quality water is within reach. Shop pro-trusted brands like Whirlpool and more, in-store or online. Lowe's. We help. You save.